So we've been reacting to the news that the Post-Gazette is no more. The hard copy version of the paper is already basically a
relic
from the past, exactly. But the online version of the paper will cease to be in May. The people that have called in lately and that have texted into the show that are now mentioning how much it was a part of their sports upbringing to find their personal stats in the paper and clip them out and turn it into some kind of keepsake, that is really resonating with me right now. Because I do feel like kids, maybe up until 10 or 15 years ago, I feel like every kid who played high school sports did some version of that or had someone do that for them. You mentioned you barely missed out on it. Like, I'm
like
sure
the one time I would have been in the box score, leading the leading scorer of the whole game either team. They didn't do the leading scores.
I'm sure Doran has a book that looks like a Encyclopedia Britannica.
Or like one of those Random House dictionaries.
Of all like his stuff. Accolades and articles and things that were written about him both at West A and Pitt.
Austin Bechtold has a small pamphlet.
Well, he's got the wiffle ball articles that were written about him.
I'm just going after Bechtold because maybe more on this later. He was apparently taking some wild pot shots earlier today at our show indirectly.
What?
He was a little out of pocket.
Well, wait, you don't have to make this wait. I want to hear what happened now. I don't want to.
He
put
basically
that off.
Implied, Donnie, make sure you're on the mic here. Donnie, of course, played football before, I think, injuries ended kind of his career at Waynesburg, which is, what was Waynesburg? D3 still? Still is D3?
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't injuries. I just wanted to focus
that was it. Okay,
on
okay.
sports.
Yeah, we're at D3. It's not, you know, it's not scholarships for athletes, et cetera. Essentially, Austin implied that like D3 athletes aren't legit athletes. That was the essentially
he
the,
calls
the truth.
D3 games.
Right?
I mean, how does he
Donnie,
say?
Donnie, am I misconstruing
so it,
what he did
it,
here?
It started.
How does he
more
illegitimize
with,
the games
on.
He calls?
Wait, Joe brought up, well, you know, Ray played football, Donnie played football, and Cabali, whose career of anything athletically ended at like 14.
Peaked at 12 when he was hitting home runs in the Mon Valley.
Yeah, he said, well, I mean, Donnie played D3.
Who said that?
That was Cabali.
Boom. And then Bechtold said he only played for a year.
Okay,
so
who was,
are
more,
you more
was it more Cabali that did this?
Or Cabali or Bechtold? Who
well,
do you think
I,
took
I
a bigger
Cabal,
shot?
I think Cabali's comment had more malice.
Yeah.
As if like
okay,
D3.
So Bechtold didn't do as much as I thought he did here.
No. He
okay.
Just
no, but he wasn't
like
an innocent bystander. He was he
Cabali's,
piled on.
I mean, Cabali's so easy to take pot shots at, though, I almost don't even feel like it. Like, that's, come on. That's too easy of a
as
target.
As if, like, zero D3 athletes have ever made it to the NFL.
Yeah, Pierre Garçon
like,
doesn't exist. London Fletcher, right.
My guy, London Fletcher, John Carroll.
I feel
a
like
lot of coaches come from that level of football.
Both right,
of
the cradle Sirianni's. Of coaches. Yep.
Yeah. Man, that seems unwarranted and unnecessary today.
Kind of a weird shot. Well, I'm not going to say it.
Was this before or after this Post-Gazette
no,
news
before.
Came out?
Before. It was before. They weren't like randomly just doing this as a sidebar. Yeah, I thought Bechtold had said a little bit more. I'd been led to believe he said a little bit more than he actually did. But still, Austin, come on, man. You don't have to piggyback with Cabali there. Let Cabali be out on the island by himself.
Did Starkey or Pomp come to your defense at all, or they just kind of let that comment marinate?
No, they both defended me.
Good.
Joe said anybody who's ever played sports at the college level, it's impressive.
Also, honestly, if you're Cabali and your career as an athlete ended more or less when puberty happened, like in your glory days were when you were 12, shouldn't you probably not say a word about that?
Sorry, I got distracted by a Zangrilli tweet because I actually think he makes a good point.
I saw the same tweet. I'm not so sure he does.
Really?
Yeah, I know. You can read it. We could debate it.
Well, he says he just wonders why they wouldn't just close up shop now and why they would wait 5 months.
Because he thinks they're trying to find a buyer. Or because he thinks they're trying to do this as a business tactic.
He thinks this is business posturing and that they're not actually ready to. They're trying to say, look, we're done unless someone comes and saves us.
And buys the paper?
Yeah.
I mean, I could say back, why weren't they actively looking for buyers behind the scenes now? Because if everyone knows that they're just going to shutter, I feel like that's going to affect the quality of the offers they would receive.
It just doesn't seem from the people who work there like they've been told or they've heard, hey, nothing to worry about. Maybe it won't be called the Post-Gazette, but you guys are all going to have jobs with some new outlet. I said to Donnie during
Somebody said to me who works there, I would have assumed ownership would have looked into that selling the paper already before making an announcement like this. I don't think Dan is correct here, for the record.
I wonder if somebody looks at the success of their sports staff and digs into whether or not sports specifically were profitable and thinks maybe I can do something with the sports people there and not have to deal with the other aspects of running a full newspaper.
They might. I feel like kind of dirty even saying that, because all those other people who are aspects of running a newspaper are still people out jobs today.
No, I know, but they're not in our sandbox. I get it. I feel what you're saying. There's empathy towards those people too. But for what we do, is there proof maybe that the sports section was still thriving, but it was the other parts of the paper that were bringing it down?
I don't know. I don't know how that balance sheet looks.
Here is Dave in the car. Hello, Dave. Hi, Dave.
Hey, guys. I'm not quite 70. I started delivering the Post-Gazette when I was 11 years old, and I made a hefty penny and a half for each one. And the coveted route was the press in the afternoon, which was 3 cents daily and 5 cents on Sundays. And I think a lot of people maybe don't realize that it was very unexpected that when there was a consolidation of media, that the Post-Gazette was the remaining newspaper, because everybody thought it would be the press, which I think dwarfed the Post-Gazette then in circulation.
Dave, I vaguely remember that as somebody. I think I delivered the press till it went on strike, Dave. And like does the early 90s sound right for a press strike?
That sounds about right. I was going to say late 80s, early 90s, somewhere
around.
But it was shocking.
Yeah, for sure, man.
And then a couple memories for me. I was at the last doubleheader at Forbes Field, the last game. And like many that day, absconded with a seat from the stadium, and my dad lacquered the headlines from both
awesome
papers on it, and I still have that today. I also was very fortunate to be at the Immaculate Reception game and have a pristine copy of the paper from that day as well. Regarding the points about media and the fractionalization of media, I think it's already underway. I mean, how many Penguin websites and how many Steeler websites
100%.
Already exist, and I think what you'd lose here is a quasi-official, in quotes, source, a centralized source that everybody goes to and which everybody draws from, I think probably including you guys. So who knows where it goes?
Definitely.
Maybe this is.
Yeah. Thanks, Dave. Thank you.
He's right.
All good points.
He's right. I feel fortunate for right now. And I mean, we obviously do try to diversify in this business. We're on YouTube. I'm looking at a screen with us. We have cameras in front of us. We're broadcasting this show live on Twitter right now. We do this every day. We stream on people's phones. I do feel fortunate that for right now, we're in a business where there's a lot of different ways to consume the product, where we are giving opinions that are often informed by the reporting, however, that are done by people who are now going to be out of a job in 4 months. And that, like, there's a certain, it's not going to go anywhere quality to what we do, at least the principle of what we try to do. But,
well, the principle of what they do is not going away. People are going to continue to write about sports.
It's just finding it just becomes so much more difficult.
Well, for the consumer, finding it becomes difficult. Selfishly for them, getting paid enough money to support your family while doing
becomes
it is
exceptionally difficult.
Yeah.
The whole appeal of a paper, in theory, is you might only like three or four of the writers or five of the writers who are writing across all sections, like editorial type stories or anything, but there is a news gathering and a reporting apparatus that like provides value. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Provides value across that spectrum.
3:15, make the smart call to the Buell Insurance Agency, 724-443-5610. Fan Hotline presented by Sullivan Super Service, Pittsburgh's trusted plumbing and HVAC provider for over 50 years. You can listen today, or you did listen today, to hear about Starkey's Card of the Week from the Baseball Card Castle in Cranberry. Contest runs every Wednesday through Friday at noon at the 93.7thefan.com contesting page. I'm not sure what the card was this week. Did you guys hear it? Aaron Rodgers, maybe? DK Metcalf coming back?
Man, how about an Adam Thielen card, maybe? Or a Calvin Austin? A Tyler Loop just for a laugh? Do they make cards for coaches? Could we have gotten a John Harbaugh Ravens?
They don't make cards for coaches, but I feel like as a kid they used to have manager cards in baseball.
They definitely had like a Jimmy Leland manager card.
They definitely did, because there's one.
Isn't there one where he's smoking a cig? There's got to be a
Leland
card
that.
Where they would have had him ripping a dart.
But like that Super 70 sports account, I think, put out one of his cards from the mid-80s when he had the pillbox cap on. And made some witty remark about how he looked more like a Civil War general or like a train conductor or something like that than a baseball manager. Starkey went on Dunlap Show Next Door right after this news broke and I guess said something like, I've been more surprised getting a paycheck every 2 weeks from the Post-Gazette than I am by this news today. The fact that the paper even made it this far, he said, was the more shocking thing than the news that it's done.
What was his hypothesis? Like, what did he say?
Just a long time for a business that's not making money to stay in business. Most businesses that lose money either do things to try to fix that or cease to be.
The ones that lose money that stay in business are usually, I would think, because the owner either thinks it's important that the like has the money to just take losses,
or it's a
right?
vanity project,
or the owner is on one side of things or another and wants to make sure, like from an editorial perspective, one viewpoint gets out. So somebody asked in the YouTube comments, "How does the Trib make money, but the PG doesn't?" Because the Trib was always the smaller of the two operations.
Yep.
My understanding, and I think you have the same one, is that the late Richard Mellon Scaife, who owned it, and was a billionaire when he passed. That his estate, like his largesse, still helps, if not entirely, basically funds that operation. Like, which I believe, and you know, don't quote me on this, but my recollection was that was like part of his will, was that he wanted a certain amount of money to always go to the Trib.
Mm-hmm.
And I would, when you have like $1 billion+ and you're running it on a certain level of a budget, I think you can kind of sustain that to some extent, even if you have to take a small loss.
Yeah, he did that more as a civic thing than he did.
Civic and like editorial. Civic and editorial. Like he had his editorial viewpoints and everything, but he did it kind of vanity to what you said in the first place. Like he wanted the Trib to exist, and I think it was in his will that like his monies and his largesse would help continue that.
I did find it incredible. And I never actually asked any of their writers about this, any of their sports writers, how. For example, like Steelers games, how many of those people would travel?
Mm-hmm.
Hotels? Like, I think back, Dublin. Mackey's there for a week. Multiple reporters. You know how many people we sent? Zero. Crowley went because he was a part of a travel junket with Steelers fans. He wasn't there in official capacity where we paid him to cover the game. You know, and they did that not just for the Steelers, but for 162 Pirates games and for 82 Penguins games, too, which honestly is great that you had that kind of coverage for as long as you did. But I can't imagine that made it a profitable
enterprise. Well, most places don't. Most places don't send people to cover games on the road in sports that aren't the NFL now. Like, you'll get a local Associated Press person. You'll pay, like, a little bit for a stringer in that market. Like it all does go back, just to be very clear, the way Google handled like internet ads, like the way all that came into being and the way Facebook went after it. Like those are the two, I can't explain on a sports talk show, nor do I care to, like the mechanics behind it, but essentially it's they took a huge cut of ad revenue.
There are some outlets that are independent now that have taken the bull by the horns, said, screw it, we're going to travel and we're going to deal with the price of it because we think that's what our readers want. We can monetize it. DK's website has done that for a while. I know Saunders' websites have and King Gursky's websites have.
I think Dan and Alan's websites. I know Dan's has been doing very well.
So, you know, they'll keep doing that. But when this happened, I thought to myself, are we going to get to a point with Penguins and Pirates road games where there's like one reporter on the road covering them?
Think about Josh Yoey. He's got the New York Times now backing the Athletic. They own it. It's an arm the Athletic is of the New York Times. They essentially eliminated their sports section and have the Athletic.
Yeah.
How long does that last for?
Well, the Athletic is even downsized in the last couple of years.
And they're going to probably, I would say, continue to downsize more towards, if your stories do big enough numbers, you stick around. Otherwise, there are like star-level
Well, they've gotten
reporters.
Rid of Beats. There's no Pirates reporter there anymore.
I know.
Anymore.
Well, I'm saying Yoey, they still see value because I suspect Josh's actual stories.
Yeah, Penguins do numbers.
And there's think about the pressure that, by the way, for a minute.
But who was the reporter there? Wasn't it Beer Temple who was the Pirates reporter?
For a while,
they just
yeah.
got rid of that
they
job.
Got, they got rid of that job. I just, when I think of it, I think, imagine the pressure if you're Josh, just for example, knowing that you've got to write stuff that does numbers. So there's got to be a certain like angle you have to be good at finding the angles.
Yeah.
It's not even about like, hey, what is in the public interest to know? It's to some extent, what do I think people will click on?
So let's say, for example, the Pirates play in San Francisco.
Yeah.
They will next year at some point. I don't know when. I don't have the Pirates schedule memorized
yet. Brownie already can't wait for that trip.
Right?
Yeah.
So you'll have DK's reporter there, unless he at some point decides to change his mind, but he's been very outspoken about how he's not doing that. You'll have his reporter there. Who else would be covering the game?
MLB.com.
Okay, MLB.com, there's two. Alex Stumpf. That's it. Because I don't think that the Pirates website that Saunders has sends a reporter on the road for every game. No, Parado was doing that. He wasn't covering 162.
I suspect games that are within a reasonable driving distance, let's just say 5 to 6 hours, probably put the outer limit at maybe Chicago.
But they go out west. Who's covering the game?
I don't. Once
two
they,
people, tops.
Tony, I think once you get past the Mississippi River, that's not, they're not sending
There's
somebody.
No Post-Gazette now. There's no... Gorman covers the Pirates for the Trib. I don't think he's done anything more than a tank of gas road game in years.
Right.
So, I mean, we get screwed. When I say we, I mean like the people that
want... The consumer that wants to know what's going on with the team and wants to get the stuff that only a beat writer who's doing the job of a beat writer can actually get.
There's still a couple outlets for that, but the point is there's not as many options
and
as there used to be.
I think I really need to – I just want to drive this home because I think this is a bad development. I'm not saying, like, teams are inherently bad. I understand why they want to do this. They're businesses. They don't want negative press out there. There is 0.0% of a reason to ever trust that if a team has their own reporter writing something or telling you something
– that it's not what the team wants you to know
yes,
or hear.
I agree. That it's true. Because if like, say you or I, because you have a source or somebody tells me something off the record, like, hey, this is on background, you can go with it, yeah. but you can't tie it to me. If they tell us something that's happening that's negative, there is no way that's getting out on the team's website.
It's
None.
Like Steelers Nation Radio, great for those guys. I'm sure they do fine work. But I can bet you every dollar in my account, they don't go on the air and say, hey, should Tomlin be fired if they lose this game? Would never be allowed to happen. There were people that had jobs taken away from them on pregame and postgame shows because of like pregame and postgame critical comments.
Mm-hmm.
Mike is in Atlanta. He's on the Fan. Hello, Mike.
Hey guys, how you doing?
Hey, brother.
I'm Thea Coriopoulos. Probably
oh, nice.
How you know me.
Cool, Mike. Good to talk to you again. What's up?
Yeah, nice talking with you. Hey, I want to throw out a Post-Gazette memory for you. So
sure.
As you guys were talking about this, I grabbed a copy. As you probably know, they do all the papers, you know, for the Super Bowl victory. So
yeah, man,
I texted you a copy of the 40th Super Bowl, and that was one for the ages. But in that souvenir edition, they give you a color insert, which is large as the paper. And basically what they give you there is they give you every single front page that they had, you know, for all the Super Bowls.
Mm-hmm.
So I went ahead and texted it over to you. It's kind of
cool
to stick with this, like, Super Steelers theme. And then every time they tack on a Super Bowl, it's like super, 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 super.
I think that, thanks, Mike. Like, that is one of the things that the digital age keepsakes from memorable games
Can't
are gone.
Can't replicate it.
I mean, even with tickets.
You can print stuff out that's maybe like, here's a digital copy and it's a high-res print, but there's not... I have...
Donnie, do you have a keepsake ticket game Sunday night? That would be a cool thing to add to your collection.
No.
You like to keep track of all the games you go to. Do you have your road game tickets that you can maybe put on a wall or turn into a framed picture or something?
All virtual.
That sucks.
When I went to Indians Marlins in 97, Game 3, I got to go to the World Series. My uncle had a pair of season tickets. My mom like let us ditch school that day, drove us up, my brother and I, to Cleveland. Longest nine-inning game in history to that point in the World Series. I have a ticket still from that game. $75, by the way. Seems like quite a bargain in 97, or nowadays. And Pony, I have a program from that game. Never going to get rid of them. I'll be 90 years old, God willing, and still alive, and I'll still have that stuff.
326, time brought to you by Two Men in a Junk Truck. Visit them, twomeninajunktruck.com. Got junk, book them now. Mike Florio going to have some thoughts on this Post-Gazette thing, plus what happens with John Harbaugh, the Steelers' chances against the Texans. More of your calls, too, on the Post-Gazette closing its doors after they opened. The first Post-Gazette happened in 1786, so 10 years after the signing of the Declaration of Independence.
And Cook's column was already in there.
Could you imagine one of those first articles? So, you know, a few years ago when we signed that Declaration thing,
old Tom Crazy. Morris hadn't even started playing golf yet. What was Cook writing about back then in that first paper?
He disagreed with the Alien and Sedition Acts.
Would target shooting with muskets have been like the sport of the day? And Cook's going, once again, George Washington proved himself. Cook's lead would have been, you know, Ben Roethlisberger once told me.
Going to be joined soon by Mike Florio. Pro Football Talk brought to you by JP Roofing and Siding, your hometown roofing expert. Let's get back to more of your thoughts on the Post-Gazette closing up shop. Here's Robin O'Hara. Hello, Rob.
Hey, guys. How you doing? I didn't do the Post-Gazette as a kid. I did the Pittsburgh Press, but it's all the same. You know what I mean? This was inevitable that it was going to happen. Half the kids can't even read today, so a newspaper doesn't do them a whole hell of a lot of good, does it? And the thing is, I want to talk about the Harbaugh situation.
Sure, go ahead.
Well, it's a shame he got let go. I mean, we won't get to watch Dumb and Dumber battle it out on the field, so to speak. We all know that should be Tomlin going, but I'm going to give you a different take on why Rooney will never fire Tomlin. And that reason is Rooney's own Hall of Fame aspirations are directly tied to this non-losing, winning season thing of Tomlin's. If he fires them, then he has nothing to hang his own hopes on.
Well, that's, you know, I've not heard people bring that up. His dad's in the Hall of Fame and his grandfather's in the Hall of Fame. If you're making a case, not just for the Hall of Fame, but what is Art Rooney II's biggest contribution as Steelers owner? What is it? What do we say?
He brought the draft to Pittsburgh, Pony.
Okay.
Everyone's going to get the draft.
Everyone's doing that now. Cleveland had it. Detroit had it. Kansas City had it.
He doesn't have a signature achievement as Steelers, as like the principal, you know. I'll say it thusly. Like, obviously, Art had taken over a lot of the day-to-day when his father was still alive. But since Dan Rooney passed, there is absolutely nothing to distinguish Art Rooney's time as the sole guy.
So what does he hang his hat on? Just ridiculous continuity?
But I think that's seen as a negative locally.
For sure.
I know it's seen as a negative locally, and
it
I
is.
Think there's like a, it's taken a while, but there's a small building groundswell of it being seen as a negative nationally.
But the difference is, to Rob's point, the Chief had a lot of losing. A lot. They were the, you know, sad sack, moribund franchise for him. Dan Rooney had losing seasons, plenty of them. 80s, 90s. Art II's never had one. That's what differentiates himself from his predecessors.
But it's easier to say Dan Rooney won two Super Bowls as the dude and got to two more basically as the dude still. I know he was the ambassador to Ireland by the 2010 Super Bowl, but still. Than it is to, and like that just resonates with people, than it is to say, hey, Art has never been worse than 8-8.
Here is Mitch in the North Hills. Hello, Mitch.
Hey, it's Rich, not Mitch.
Oh, sorry, man.
Oh, that's okay. Actually, I just had two teeth pulled, so I'm probably talking funny.
Still got the Novocaine effect going there? You still all like numbed
up? Oh, yeah. My lip's down by my belly button somewhere.
Wow. All right. I'm glad you're calling a radio show.
Was this an emergency
like this
procedure? Yeah. Or had you planned to have all these teeth pulled?
No, I planned it. I broke one of the two teeth. And the other ones, I had to get some implants and crowns and all that crap.
Oh.
So okay. There goes my new Mercedes-Benz payment.
Oh, geez.
Okay.
Anyway, I got a funny story. This is about the Press, not the Post-Gazette necessarily. We were out at Ross Park Mall during Christmas. My wife and two kids going to one of the bookstores. I forget which one. And outside the store is Jim O'Brien.
Yeah, the writer. The
writer of
the
many
author.
Steelers books.
Yeah, the author.
Correct. So we go in, and they stayed in there longer. I came outside, and I was talking to him, and, hey, what's your next book you're doing? And he said, Lambert. I said, oh, you just missed Lambert's number one fan. And he probably said to himself, yeah, sure. You know, everyone says that. You know, everyone loves Lambert, blah, blah, blah. And I saw that in his face. I said, no, I'm not kidding. So I start telling him a couple of stories.
Okay.
She had in her bedroom everything that was ever written about Lambert cut out of the newspaper and pasted on the wall.
Who had this?
I'm sorry?
Who had this in their
My
bedroom?
Wife.
Your wife. Okay.
My wife, when she was growing up.
Okay. She had a shrine to Jack Lambert.
It was covered.
Covered?
So I told him a couple other stories. I'm not going to say on the radio here because I might get her arrested.
Okay.
Had something to do with going in his house and into his mailbox to make sure it was Lambert's house. So I'll leave it at that.
That's usually the kind of behavior reserved for like late 90s girls who are fans of boy bands.
We'll shut it down there, but thank you for the call. We have Mike ready to go here, Donnie. Mike Florio, Pro Football Talk. He will have the Patriots and Chargers Sunday night. We'll wait till Monday for the Steelers and Texans. There's a lot of different things we can obviously talk about, Mike, but just this popped into my head right now. The game you have, the game we're going to be obviously paying the closest attention to. How does the sausage get made on what games air on what days? Because everybody plays the game of, all right, when is Steelers-Texans going to happen? When is this game going to happen? And all of my friends were like, oh, Bears and Packers will be at 4:25 on Sunday because that's the best time slot and that's the best game. And then it pops up on Amazon Saturday night. So if you can, take us behind the scenes on how these games get picked and where they get picked. Is there a draft? Is that how it works? Is there a draft with all these TV networks?
Well, I'm not consulted for any of it. And I don't hear anything until the announcement is made. I believe that the networks will make their preferences known, but at the end of the day, they submit to the NFL and the NFL makes their decision. And obviously the Saturday night decision, having the Bears Packers, that has a lot of people upset because it's streaming only. And I'm getting emails directed to me complaining about it as if I made the decision and or I work for Amazon, not NBC. But the streaming thing is real. That's part of the mix. The NFL is going to make those decisions, and it's just whatever the league wants to do. But the networks do make it known what they want, and there is some back and forth there. But at the end of the day, the league makes the decisions, and we just find out when everybody else does.
Is it reasonable then to assume that the Steelers are on Monday night because it's a home game here and the league just loves the idea of that brand in a standalone primetime slot? Because the Texans, when they make the playoffs, Mike, are pretty much always good for that death slot on Saturday.
Well, the Panthers, thanks to backing into the playoffs and just not being all that of an exciting football team to watch, they got the death slot on Saturday. I think the pairings were set before we knew that the Steelers would be hosting the game.
It said Steelers or Ravens. They did it at halftime of the
Ravens
game.
Ravens are a similarly big brand too, though, to be fair.
I just think that they make their decisions and off we go. And of course, whoever wins that game on Monday night is going to be playing on Sunday. There's no way they play on Saturday, but still it's going to be a tight turnaround. Even if you have the late Sunday game, which they've slid them back a little bit on Sunday, it's not the same as the night schedule, the Saturday schedule that has late afternoon and then 8 o'clock at night. But still, especially if it's the Texans, they're going to have to go home and then they're going to have to travel somewhere else between Monday night and whenever they play on Sunday.
Mike, did the Steelers get John Harbaugh fired or did Lamar Jackson get John Harbaugh fired?
You know, it's funny. And you know it's a big deal when, at least for me, when my wife starts asking questions about it, that's a big deal because it's crossed over.
It's crossed the Rubicon.
And she was trying to process how a missed field goal got John Harbaugh fired. Even though the missed field goal didn't get him fired, if the guy makes the field goal, he doesn't get fired because they're getting ready for a game this week. Doesn't mean he wouldn't have gotten fired later, but he doesn't get fired in that moment, and it could have been Mike Tomlin who walks away, I think, if anything, if that kick had been good. Lamar Jackson and the handling of Lamar Jackson, the development of Lamar Jackson is part of it, but the more I think about it, I don't rule out Lamar Jackson being gone either. I think he may decide that he wants out. The coaching move is going to be, I think, the most critical piece, but this could be a situation where at the end of the day, Harbaugh's out, and then later, assuming the Ravens can find a trade partner, Lamar Jackson could be out. They both could end up being gone, but it just was a bad situation, and it was time. Everything that was said, everything Ben Roethlisberger said 5 weeks ago about Mike Tomlin applies to John Harbaugh. It was time. It's been too long. 18 years, very long, just like 19. Very long time, time for a change. And when we were there on Sunday at the game, and we were on their sideline, and get a chance to get, you know, pulse on the vibe of the team and whatever, they were just thrilled to be there. They were thrilled to even have a shot, given how bad things have been this year and the lows and the highs, 1-5 start, and then they claw back, and it's a little wobbly after that. They loved the idea that they still had a chance. Then once that game's over, the owner had to make a decision. And yeah, I think that the relationship with Lamar Jackson was part of it, but that doesn't mean Lamar Jackson's still going to be there. It wasn't a choice necessarily between quarterback and coach. It may have just been coach was the first, and then we'll see what happens with the quarterback.
In your opinion, are both John Harbaugh and Kevin Stefanski in this recently of this division, late of the AFC North, are they head coaches next year? And if so, where?
Right now, it looks like John Harbaugh is going to end up with the New York Giants, but we still have steps to go in the process. And to the extent that John Harbaugh finds a significant demand for his services, he's going to have leverage when it's time to negotiate, not just money, but also whatever changes he may want, whatever people he may want to bring with him. And I don't know. I don't, you know, until it's done, it's not done. But it feels like those two are the most desired candidates for now. For now, teams want coaches with experience. Teams want coaches who have proven they can do the job. And even though Kevin Stefanski was the fall guy for the definitely not dysfunctional Browns, and please, please, Jimmy Haslam is asking nicely, please don't call the Browns dysfunctional. Even though he ultimately paid the price for the worst move in the history of the NFL, and that's not hyperbole, the Deshaun Watson trade and contract was the single worst move in NFL history. It robbed the Browns of 6 draft picks, 3 first-round picks, relatively cheap talent that would have formed the nucleus of the team from 2022 moving forward, $230 million fully guaranteed to a guy who didn't do anything. The second year of that failed experiment, Kevin Stefanski finds a way to the playoffs. He's coach of the year every time he gets to the playoffs because everybody's amazed by the fact that anybody can take the Browns to the playoffs. So I think folks who get it will factor in what an overall mess Cleveland is. And there are too many chefs, the owner's involved, he meddles and he tries to act like he doesn't. And it's just been a disaster there. And I feel like they had to do something because beyond having to get the fans to renew their season tickets every year, they're going to open a new stadium. It's just a matter of time before they start asking for significant PSLs for the season tickets there. I think they felt compelled to have something a little a little more sizzle. So I think Stefanski can get it done, but if it's not the Giants for him, we'll see where it plays out.
Mike, you said minutes before the game kicked off on Sunday night that Tomlin could step away and possibly do TV. I heard that from you and thought that was more based on sourcing and reporting than just your own two cents and opinion. A, is that true? And do you think even after the win Sunday that that's still in play?
Here's what happens, and I'll peel the curtain back a little bit. I mean, I've been doing this 25 years, and I can tell when someone in a position like mine is saying something without saying something. And last week, it was clear that the people who were talking about Mike Tomlin possibly going to TV knew something. They weren't just theorizing. They weren't just speculating. They knew something. And I can't remember how I phrased it on Sunday night, but I believe, I don't know, but I believe Mike Tomlin's got an opportunity in TV in his back pocket, and he's got to decide when the season's over whether or not he's going to take advantage of it. That's what I believe, based upon everything I've seen, heard, etc. I think he's got something, and it's just up to him at the right time, walking away from the Steelers and walking through that door, which means Zach Taylor, the one guy who should have been fired in the AFC North, may be the dean of the AFC North coaches before too long.
Mike Florio, he'll have Patriots and Chargers. Based on what happens in that game, we'll know by the time the Steelers kick off where they'll go if they win.
What are the fireworks?
Playoff win drought. Whoa.
Whoa, what is going on? For the people who are not watching this on YouTube, you just had fireworks go off behind you.
That was like a New Year's thing.
Yeah, it's a safety hazard. Don't do that at home.
See, you know,
it's something about this platform, because I do spots in Chicago twice a week, and we do this same thing. And I've learned that if you do the double thumbs up, you get the fireworks.
And now it's there. Oh, wait.
Yeah, there they are.
That is crazy.
Tony, should we try to do, like, if I hit the camera and do this?
Nothing. It's special for Mike. Oh, it's that, a Florio-only feature. See you, Mike.
Very nice.